Today is Transitions Tuesday on Mind Talk. I am your host, Dr. Pamela Brewer. Mind Talk is the show that provides you with relationship health and mental health information every day. And on Transitions Tuesday, we focus on all things related to the many different kinds of transitions we all have occasion to experience in our lives. Today's guest joins us to tell us that you can be an adult doesn't necessarily mean you're grown. Alfred A. Edmond Jr., co-author with Zara D. Green of Loving in the Grown Zone, has created a no-nonsense guide to making healthy decisions in the quest for loving, romantic relationships of honor, esteem, and respect. Alfred Edmond is best known as an award-winning journalist, editor, and media executive with Black Enterprise magazine, and he's the host of the nationally syndicated radio feature Money Matters for American Urban Radio Networks. Edmond is widely recognized as an expert in personal finance, entrepreneurship, mentorship, leadership development, and the practical application of faith and daily living. He also appears regularly on television and nationally syndicated radio, including serving as a commentator of PBS's Nightly News Report, a weekly contributor of the Doug Banks Show radio program, and a guest expert on MSNBC's Your Business and CNN. Alfred A. Edmond Jr., welcome to Mind Talk.
It's such a great pleasure to be here.
Well, I have to start with asking what is probably a question in the minds of many who are listening. You work with Black Enterprise magazine. You are a man, and you are an African-American man, and you, with your co-author, have written a book about relationships. And how many times have we heard that there are no good men left? There's certainly no good African-American men left. And yet here you are on the cover with your co-author of a book about relationships. How'd that happen?
Well, and my personal story, along with Zara Green, is that these were kind of tracks that we were on before we ever knew each other existed, before we met, and even after we became acquainted. So in my life as a business, entrepreneurship, personal finance expert, I'm now in my 29th year at Black Enterprise.
Wow.
One of the things that I've learned both in my personal life and through observation of other people is that your decision-making with your money and in business is often shaped by your mental health, your emotional health, and your personal growth or lack thereof.
Absolutely.
So what I began to experience, and Zara's background is a little different from mine. She started out as a broadcast journalist, but has become an expert on personal growth. She's actually not here with me, my partner, because she's actually getting certified in workshop training for Heal Your Life training in California. So we both kind of came from different directions but came to the same conclusion, that if you don't get your personal decision-making, your personal growth foundation set, then a lot of your decisions will be poor. And here's what I mean. Over the years, we know what the principles of good financial management are. We teach them at Black Enterprise. I teach them on Money Matters. And I know people who can tell me that hook, line, and sinker. They can teach it to me better than I can teach it to them. But what I started realizing was that knowing the right things to do and doing the right things are two totally different things.
Absolutely.
And the disconnect, usually when someone continues to make decisions that are destructive, that are not advantageous to the lives of themselves or the people that they love, it's usually that means a self-love and a personal growth deficit.
Okay.
When you don't do what you know is best for you, but you continue to habitually do what is not best for you, that usually is a matter of a deficit of self-love and a deficit of personal growth. And both Zara and I, from different directions, came to the same conclusion, so that when we met, we both learned that not every adult choice is a grown decision.
Gotcha.
Not every adult, everything you have the adult right to do. And we all have the adult right to do many things. Not all of those rights are grown, healthy choices to make in our lives. And so much of the destruction you see in people's lives, whether it's unplanned for unwanted children, divorces, and I'm twice divorced, and Zara's twice divorced, bankruptcy. You look, or even the extreme cases, and we watch a lot of true crime television at our house. You look at people getting killed or killing other people, whether it's through domestic abuse or some other what we call adult messiness, and we look at how many of those stories started out with, "I was in love." We did it because we loved each other. We did this because we loved each other, and we realized that there was a need to have healthy guidelines for what it means to pursue what we all want. We want loving, safe, emotionally safe, physically safe, respectful, honorable relationships. We all have that same need. We don't all know how to go about fulfilling that need.
One of the things that gets said early on and repeatedly in different ways in your book, Loving in the Grown Zone, is that, and I am quoting now from the book, "There may be no such thing as perfect, but that is no justification for accepting less than healthy." And so many times, men and women of all races, of all religions, will say, "Well, you know, there's not much left. He was not so great. She wasn't perfect, but it was that person or nothing." What do you say to that response?
Well, I mean, you hit the nail right on the head for why we wrote the book in the first place. We've been conditioned to believe that you have two choices, to be alone or to be in unhealthy relationships and be satisfied and happy on occasionally, but for the most part, just kind of tolerating the evil, you know, the best evil you can get.
Right.
You know, and
it's true.
We challenge that notion. The truth is there are people who have healthy, productive relationships, but unfortunately, too few of us have been taught how to pursue that. We've been, some would say brainwashed, I'll say conditioned, by everything from fairy tales that we were, you know, read when we were kids, to movies, and television shows and songs that basically, boil it down to some type of instantaneous, spontaneous connection. And then what gets lost is that there's a real methodology for identifying healthy relationships, both romantic and otherwise. But we're not taught it. You're not taught it in schools. Too many of us don't learn it at home. Unfortunately, we don't always learn it in our faith experiences,
right,
whether it's church or temple. And what ends up happening is we do it by trial and error, and with a lot of error. And as a result, we lower our standards and expectations for what's possible in relationships, and we end up settling, getting what we settle for. And our goal is to get people to raise the bar, to understand this is possible, to debunk the myth that it's not possible. And then the book is designed to help you to have guidelines and standards and skill sets that will help you to understand how to make it happen.
You know, there are so many times when I've actually talked to people in my office, and what I've heard is a variation of what you've just said, which is, you know, people tell me my standards are too high and maybe I should just lower my standards. And when I ask what their standards are, you know, they're very reasonable. They kind of want a grown-up person who is able to take care of him or herself and is able to be responsive and responsible. I mean, that's sort of it in a nutshell. And so many times people say, you know, you're just asking for too much. Does he come home at night? Does she show up? That's enough. What's wrong with you for looking for so much?
Well, there's a quote in the book, and it's not, I mean, we do accredit the quote, so it doesn't come from us, and I can't remember exactly who said it. I think it's Maureen Dowd who said it. If you settle, you'll always get less than you settled for. And what we have is a society of people settling in relationships and then getting less than what they actually settled for, which becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Our position is that the first and foundational love is your love and understanding and knowledge of self, that you need to know what is critical to your care and treatment, which is unique to each individual, but only you can know that. Then once you understand that standard, and it is a standard, you can't lower the standard for your own treatment is your responsibility. Setting that standard, understanding what's good and healthy for you, is your responsibility. If you set it and enforce it, you'll actually be perfectly happy with your life without a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about relationships are a solution to finding happiness in your life. You have to be happy with who you are in your relationship with yourself and the life that you're living. And then what happens is you attract people who will affirm the life that you've already created. And so the reason why settling is a no-win situation is because the lower you set the bar, the lower the standard, the more unqualified and underqualified candidates you attract. You don't need a bunch of candidates. You need a handful of qualified candidates.
Right.
And you only get that when you raise the bar. And we're not talking about raising the bar saying, oh, they got to be a billionaire and they have to, you know, look like, you know, Idris Elba or, you know, Halle Berry. Or, you know, we're not talking about those types of standards. In fact, we address that in the book. Those are attractors. They're legitimate attractors, but they have nothing to do with sustainable relationships. We're talking about the standard that says, I need laughter in my life.
Mm.
I need someone who I can be safe with. Those are the kinds of sustainers that when beauty fades, when jobs come and go, when your salary is no longer six figures, when you know when you're 85 years old and your body doesn't work the way it worked when it was 35, but those are the things that still will make people say, I want to be with this person, and I love this person, and I trust this person. But we're taught to look for everything but that.
Exactly.
And then we hope that down the road that stuff will come.
You know, so many times, I know that you and your associate have heard this. I certainly hear it. People who are dating and marrying potential. They are potentially going to be fill in the blanks at some point. Is that another form of settling?
It's absolutely a form of settling. And here's one of the things we address in the book. Marriage doesn't change people.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we talk about the four relationship fixes that never work. Marriage, procreation, sex, and money. All of those things are the four major things that people say, if I bring enough of these four things or one of these four things to the table, I will take someone who has quote-unquote potential and make them into the person I need them to be. And it never, ever works.
Never.
So we always tell people, if you don't know them when you meet them, or you think you're going to change them into what you want, or they're going to grow into what you want because you married them, that's probably the number one cause of divorce.
Yeah.
Of people thinking that the marriage is going to transform them. If a person is not committed to fidelity, for example, people say, I'm going to make an honest woman out of her, or I'm going to make them retire from the player game because my love is going to make them do that. And men will let women play that game. Women will compete to say that they're going to be the one that makes them stop playing. A man who's not committed to fidelity on general principle is not going to suddenly become committed because he has a ring on your finger. And I think if we could get people to understand that you whoever you marry, whoever you choose, becomes more of what they are, not less of what they are. So you better like and enjoy and know the person before you marry them and realize that that's who you're going to be with for the rest of their life, and they're going to pretty much be that way. Short of you know lightning striking,
right?
But unfortunately, we're taught by movies. Again, how many movies have you seen where the person was one kind of person and they so-called meet the love of their life and they turn into a different kind of person
by magic?
We're not doing these things because we're crazy. Those are the types of the romantic storylines that we've been fed probably since we were 5 years old
and even earlier, folks. You are listening to the voice of Alfred A. Edmond Jr., who is co-author with Zara D. Green of Loving in the Grown Zone, a no-nonsense guide to making healthy relationship decisions. My name is Pamela Brewer. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back, so don't go away. We are back continuing the conversation with Alfred Edmonds, co-author of Loving in the Grown Zone. Alfred, at the beginning of your book, you share a story about Sharon, who had an intense affair and two children, and several years later, the love of her life was still married, except not to her. And you also tell the story about Joshua, hardworking guy. He was with the love of his life. He even got a second job so that he could accommodate her financial requirements. But when he lost his job, he lost the love of his life. Are these examples of loving in the grown zone or no?
These are examples of not loving in the grown zone, but they're also the kind of decision making that we commonly make, that I've made, Zara has made. So we use them as examples of how people can do things that are perfectly within their adult right to do. Neither Sharon nor Joshua did anything that they didn't have the adult right to do, and they did it in pursuit of love. They didn't do it because they wanted to damage their lives. They didn't want to have negative right. experiences. But they were doing what they were taught to do. So in the case of Sharon, we've been taught that if you meet somebody and sparks fly upon meeting them, they must be the one.
Right.
And in her example, she commits to him. There are four things that we say in the grown zone should be the last things that you commit to a relationship, but we're taught is the first things that you commit. Access to your body, access to your money, access to your home, and access to your heart, which is your emotional safety.
Mm-hmm.
We're taught that when you meet that person at the party or at the bar or at the church or at the grocery store, and you feel you have that feeling, then one or all of those four things you should give up right away. In the case mm-hmm. of Sharon, she meets him. They have a connection, and literally that night she gives up her body, and she's in love, and she doesn't ask too many questions, and before she knows that she's given up her heart, which is her emotional engagement with him, she's mm-hmm. now emotionally attached to him. Then she finds out that he's married with three children, and at least one of the mistress. And all you got to do is watch your typical, your true crime stories on uh-huh. Discovery ID or watch your typical, Judge Judy or Paternity Court with Lauren Lake. And it's filled with women and men who said, I thought they were the one, and I gave up these things right away.
Right.
And so, one of the things that we do in the book Loving in the Grown Zone is to deconstruct the thought process that we've been taught that says, if the attractors are present, and in the case of Sharon, he's good-looking, he's sexy, he's fun, all of which are great reasons to be attracted to someone.
Sure.
But being good-looking, sexy, and fun is not going to sustain the relationship.
Right.
And being good-looking and sexy and fun doesn't tell you who this person is.
Exactly.
And we tell people, we say all the time in the book, we get caught up in what a person is when the key to relationships is knowing who the person is and what can be determined almost at a glance. If you look at somebody and they have the kind of body you like, and they have the kind of face you like, and the hair you like, and that's like an instant decision to see what a person is. Oh,
right.
She has a great body. Oh, he makes me laugh. Oh, look at that smile. Look at those eyes. Or he's driving that car. Or, mm-hmm. he works at that company. Or she lives in the right neighborhood. All of those things that are at a glance are the what's of a person. But you don't bond yourself to a person until you know who they are. Unfortunately, we're taught to bond almost instantly.
We
live in a society where sex within hours of meeting a person you're attracted to is socially acceptable. Again, the grown zone, we're not the moral police in the grown zone.
Mm-hmm.
We always tell people, you have the exact adult right to do whatever you want to do. The question becomes, is it healthy for you? The standard in the grown zone is what is healthy for you, what is healthy for the people that you love. We spend a lot of time. We do a weekly radio show on Blog Talk Radio, the Grown Zone Radio. You can find it at blogtalkradio.com/Grown Zone.
Okay.
And we talk about those situations where women meet men. They feel like they're in love. They may have young children at home or teenage children at home. And they, within weeks, bring the man home and say, he's my man. We move them into the house.
Right.
And there was one really horrible case, and it happens more often than we like to admit, where the men molested the children.
Mm-hmm.
but she didn't really know who he was.
Right.
They had sparks, and she wanted a man, and we talked about settling earlier in this show, and a good man is hard to find, so I need to settle for what I can get.
Exactly.
And he wants me,
yeah.
And we end up bringing very horrible situations into our home and into our lives because we go by those temporary attractors that are about the what of a person and not the who of a person.
So clearly, just because somebody is breathing and maybe has a job, that's not a reason to say this is the one for me. And that's what a lot of people, quite frankly, base their decisions on. They're breathing, they have a job, they look good.
Well, we lost the art, and I'm not going to be the first person, I'm sure, on your show that has said this. We forget that the point of dating is not to choose the one. The point of dating is to sort and screen, what we call screen and sort.
Mm.
You're dating to get to know people. And so when we tell people that they should withhold those four things, their body, their money, access to their home, access to their heart, we're not saying you should hole up in the house, never go on a date, never socialize, never go to parties, never go to the club. We're saying use those occasions to get to know people, to give it time,
okay,
so that eventually you'll eliminate certain people. Oh, that guy was really cute at the club, but now I know he's married.
Mm-hmm.
Cross him off the list. Oh, that girl sure was a sweet girl to talk to, but now I understand that she has four children, and I'm not really committed to that. And we have to be honest when we know we're not committed to that.
Right.
You know, as opposed to feeling guilty, well, she needs a man and she has four kids, I should do it. No, if you know having children at this stage of your life is not what you want to do, then have the courage to say, great person, somebody is right for her, but I'm not right for her. And if you use that process, the dating, partying, socializing process, appropriately, what happens is you'll meet a lot of great people, but you have not committed your heart, your body, your home, and your money, you have time to get to know them without bonding to them.
Mm-hmm.
Because those four things are what bond you to human beings. One night of sex will bond you to someone even if you don't ever intend to see them again. And so the goal is to get to know people before you bond to them, so that when you bond to them, you're more likely to have screened out people who are not appropriate and healthy for you, and you're more likely to bond to someone who is healthy for you and you're healthy for them. The divorce rate is not high because there's something wrong with the institution of marriage.
Mm-hmm.
The divorce rate is high because many of us are marrying the wrong people too soon and then thinking the marriage is going to make, you know, the fact that we said I do is going to make everything happen. You build the relationship before marriage because the wedding is only going to consummate whatever exists. If the relationship is a hot mess, the wedding is going to consummate and solidify and bond you
with
into
the
hot mess.
Yeah, absolutely.
But if it's a healthy relationship and you establish that before you get married, then the marriage and the wedding will bond and consummate that healthy relationship. And those are the people who you look at 50 years from now, you know, 60 years from now, and their bodies don't look the same. They don't have the same jobs. Sex isn't the same. But they are the same because they built the relationship on the sustainers that keep, you know, relationships growing, not the least of which is friendship, honor,
mm-hmm,
esteem, and respect.
Now, I hear you using language like marriage and wait and learning the person and not having sex within the first 4 seconds of meeting somebody. And these could all be thrown in the old school category. And I'm thinking somebody 18, 20 years old might hear us having this conversation and say, oh, that's just for old people.
Well, here's a couple of things I'd say to that. One, the 18, 19, 20 years olds are looking up at us so-called old people and seeing a whole bunch of messiness.
Okay.
They're looking at their parents. They're looking at, you know, people who are in their 40s and 50s. Look at social media and look at the back shots of 50-year-olds on Instagram doing back shots like they're, you know, models, like they're 20 and they're still in college. So part of the challenge is younger people, and our target audience is adult millennials and Gen Xers, so between the ages of, say, 22 and 45,
okay,
they're looking for better examples because now they're looking at their parents, they're looking at step-parents, they're looking at older brothers and sisters, and they're saying, I don't want this.
Okay.
You know, but they're being told it's either this or you'll be by yourself. So we don't go old school, new school. We don't say old fashioned, new fashioned. What we tell people in the grown zone is look at the outcomes.
Okay.
Again, our standard, is it healthy or is it unhealthy? And if you want a healthy, productive life, don't worry about whether it's old school or new school. Worry about if it works. Now, if having sex within hours of meeting people has worked for you, talk to the average 40-year-old woman who may have, you know, spent the, you know, her last 15 years going that route, and ask her if she's happy. How often is that woman, a happily married woman with a stable family and a healthy, happy life? And I'll take the flip side. I'm a man who was probably taught from the age of 10 that you never turn down sex. And that if whether you really care for her or not, that's what you do. Now, fortunately, I had a very strong mother who did some counter program for me and my brother.
Okay.
So I didn't do as much damage as I could have done. But look at the average man who's now, let's say, 45. The single biggest driver of erectile dysfunction medicines is men who reach 45 and realize, you know what? Sex is not going to keep a woman with me. Sex is not going to allow me to be safe. Sex is not going to bring me a home to a home of peace and joy and happiness. And yet they are panicking now because they've been taught since the age of 10 or 11 years old, sometimes younger, that if sex is not part of the relationship, you don't have value in this relationship. You can't be safe. So what we're telling people is look ahead of you. If you're 25 or you're 20 or 22, look at the average 35-year-old, average 42-year-old, and identify those who are in happy, healthy, productive relationships and those who are not, and then examine how they got to where they are.
You talk a lot. I mean, I hear the word marriage coming up consistently in your conversation. Sounds like you were absolutely a proponent of marriage. Are you a proponent of living together?
Well, let me make sure I'm being very clear. Zara and I aren't married yet.
Okay.
We do live together. We've been together. Well, we've been together 5 years. She's been living. We've been living together probably 3.5 to 4 years.
Okay.
Maybe longer than that. Now the dates are going by. But so, and I've been married twice.
Okay.
And divorced. She's been married twice and divorced. I absolutely intend to marry Zara Green. She knows
okay.
this. We actually, you know. But when we get married, it's going to be such a quiet non-event that most people will not know about it until after we do it.
Gotcha.
Here's why. What I learned through my experiences, what she learned through her experiences, and what we also talk about in the book, is we live in a society that teaches us that the wedding is the finish line.
Indeed.
The marriage is the finish line. And so your goal is to get to the finish line. Get married. Get married. Get married as much as possible. Now, the bridal industry doesn't really care how many they want. The more weddings, the better.
Yeah,
they don't. They make money every time you get married, divorced, married again. So you have a commercial force and a societal force that says get married at all costs, but they don't have to pay the price once the wedding day is over.
Right.
So our proposition is not that we're pro-marriage or anti-marriage. I happen to be personally pro-marriage, but I'm pro-marriage built on the foundation of healthy relationships.
Okay.
So Zara and I have spent, after both of us having gone through this process before, saying, let's make sure this foundation that we're building about who we are and who we want to be together is solid.
Gotcha.
And then we can get married, because we did it the other way around a couple of times each. We've met somebody, we thought they were right when we married them quickly, and then lost, in my case, combined probably 18 years of my life between the two marriages. Because I didn't take my time. I wanted to commit quickly for a lot of reasons, and I wanted to marry, you know. And as long as we teach people that marriage is a finish line, then the divorce rate is going to be very high. So we advise people, and I advise, I mentor a lot of people, however number of weeks you spend planning the wedding, you should be spending at least a month planning the marriage.
Gotcha.
And lot of people will end up not getting married once they realize they have to meet that bar. There's a chapter of the book that says wedding planning is not marriage planning.
Which is very true. Folks, this is Pamela Brewer. You're listening to Alfred A. Edmond, co-author with Zara Green of Loving in the Zone, in the Grown Zone. We'll be right back. Alfred, while you talk a lot about the value of having a carefully thought out sort of inclusive approach towards marriage, you also talk about the need to embrace being single. Because as you and I both know, there are so many people who think that between single and miserably married, single is worse.
And if you think that way as a single person, you're almost guaranteed to have a miserable marriage.
Right.
Because what you're saying is that your value as a human being and the value of your own life is less as a single person. And women in particular carry that burden even more. That women feel less worthy if they're single. They are constantly going to, you know, Thanksgiving dinner or going home for Christmas.
Exactly.
Or going to the reunion and it's, girl, you're not married yet?
Exactly.
Girl, you don't have no babies yet? You know, what's wrong? And the inference is there's something wrong with you or there's something wrong with your life. Even that whole, your standards are too high. That's a criticism.
Yeah.
And so what you have is a lot of women, men too, but women more, who feel their lives are not meaningful until they can get booed up. Forget about marriage. If they can just get some man to be in their bed sometimes. I mean, we're talking about how low the bar has dropped.
Mm-hmm.
I'll share a man. I'll know he's married.
Right.
I'll know that I'm not the only one, but at least I can say I have somebody.
Right.
And that, and then, of course, there's a whole bunch of, you know, self-destructive and relationship destruction that comes out of that thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Our foundational premise of loving in the grown zone, and we tell people it's a personal growth book disguised as a relationship book, that your first love affair, your most important love affair, the love of your life is you. Now, I'm a Christian, but this book is not a religious book. In fact, it's not just for black people. We tell people
right.
all the time
right.
it's for everybody, even though obviously Zara and I are black. But speaking as a Christian, God loves me unconditionally. That's what I believe.
Okay.
How dare I love myself any less?
Mm.
How dare I put my life on hold and say that I'm not worthy of love unless someone else loves me?
Mm.
And that's what you're telling yourself when you say, or you accept from other people,
right.
that in singleness, your life is less valuable. You are less valuable as a human being. And here's the other challenge if you don't appreciate and enjoy your single life fully. You don't attract what you want in relationships. You attract what you are.
Right.
So if you're a person, let's say you're a woman who really wants a man of fidelity, but to get that man, you're practicing infidelity by sharing men, cheating with married men, doing all those things that women are told they have to do to get a man. If you're living a life of infidelity, you're not going to attract a man of fidelity.
Right.
If you're living a life that's very boring and staid because you feel like you need to put your life on hold until you find a mate, then you're not going to attract an exciting person as a mate. You're going to attract people who are just as boring as you are. You know, so your single life has to be almost an advertisement for the kind of mate that you want.
Gotcha.
If you want to be physically fit, you don't wait to find a mate that's going to make you go to the gym.
Mm-hmm.
You go to the gym and you work out and you live a fit lifestyle. If you love food and you like going, you know, traveling to different countries to sample different foods, you don't wait until you get a partner. You go and travel and eat foods from all over the world. Whatever it is that you love, you should be doing that in single life. One, because you'll be happy. You'll
right.
be doing things you love.
Right.
And two, guess who you're most likely to run into when you're doing those things? People who love the same things you do. People
exactly.
who have the same values that you do. People who will share your life, who will come with you and not tell you to change your life, but will say, hey, our lives are very compatible. I love being with you. Let's go travel the world together and eat food from all over the world. You know, Zara and I, you know, it's very interesting. We didn't know we would ever meet.
Mm-hmm.
But I was living the life that I loved before I met her.
Uh-huh.
She was pursuing the life that she loved before she met me. So when we met, our lives were already kind of lined up. And then it was just a matter of taking the time to get to know each other. But we knew we were going to have fun together, even if we didn't become romantic. So I am someone who tells women all the time, and men too, but women all the time. Men, if you want a safe relationship of fidelity, you can't be being the player.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
You can't have it both ways. You got to be a man of fidelity to attract a woman of fidelity and have a life of fidelity. You're not going to just suddenly change after you get married. And I feel so bad for men who really do believe that when they put the ring on the finger, somehow they're going to be different.
Right.
And then they realize that they've cultivated, they condition themselves with an appetite for multiple women. And then they get married and they want to be faithful to their wife, but it takes time to deprogram themselves from this idea that I got to have different women every week or every month or every night. So I know men who've ruined marriages and are totally, mm-hmm. emotionally, destroyed over it because they couldn't change their appetite on a dime. So I tell young men all the time, you don't want to condition yourself to the point where you can't be a good husband, you can't be a good partner, you can't be a good mate, because you've conditioned yourself with a lifestyle that is anything but, and you got talked into believing, and it's not just sex.
Right.
People say, I'm going to stop smoking as soon as I get married.
Exactly.
I'm going to stop drinking as soon as I have when this baby comes, I become a father, I become a mother, I'm going to stop drinking. And it doesn't happen that way. It really doesn't. So single life is your time. It's supposed to be purposeful. It's for you to decide mm-hmm. who you want to be, how to honor, esteem, and respect yourself to be your best self, so that when you're ready to choose someone to be with you, you can choose the best person to be with you based on your understanding and love of yourself.
Well, speaking of choosing the best person to be with you, we're talking about loving in the grown zone. How do you tell if he's grown or she's grown? Can you tell, or do you just kind of have to go catch as catch can?
You absolutely should not be going catch as catch can. And this is something we address regularly on our website at grownzone.com. I already talked about our radio show. The most popular chapters of the book, Loving in the Grown Zone, is three signs that he's not a grown man.
Mm-hmm.
And three signs she's not a grown woman.
Okay, give us the three signs that he's not a grown man.
All right, well, there are three signs that he's not a grown man.
Okay.
One, he sees violence as a legitimate way to communicate in a relationship.
Okay.
And I don't mean just physical violence. Emotional violence, verbal violence, financial violence, because it's possible to use money to
Indeed.
Hurt and control other people.
Mm-hmm.
If he sees violence as not only an acceptable way for human interaction, but in many cases a desirable way
right.
of human interaction, he's not grown. He's an adult male,
okay.
but he's not a grown man.
Okay.
Another sign, he does not hold himself accountable for the outcomes of his choices, but blames others and refuses to share responsibility for his choices.
Okay.
This is the dude that it's the man holding me back, it's the white man holding me back, it's my family, it's the hood I'm from. It's always someone and somebody else that's keeping him from doing the right thing.
It's my boss, it's my job, it's my woman, it's whatever.
It's my mama, it's my daddy. It's,
right.
It's something and somebody else. It's the government. It's just
right.
everything's against me. And so when I do things that aren't right and good, it's not my fault.
It's their
he's
fault.
He's an adult male,
right.
but he's not a grown man. Grown men are accountable for their choices. Grown men don't do random procreation. Neither do grown women, by the way. Babies don't just pop up out of nowhere and it's oops, 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 oops. How did that happen? Grown people don't do that. Another way a person is not a grown
Okay, wait,
man.
Let's back up a second, because there yeah. are so many babies that have popped up, whether randomly or intentionally, sometimes because he or she thought that a baby would solidify the marriage or the relationship. A baby would create a marriage. A baby would mean that you're worthy or valuable, or one of those oops babies where protection didn't make sense to you because it didn't really feel good. So, I mean, there's all kinds of ways that all these babies pop up. You're saying if they pop up like that,
That's not a grown decision.
That's not a grown decision.
Because grown people are responsible for their behaviors and they are responsible for the outcomes of their lives. So does that mean that it's not possible to have a pregnancy where you thought that the relationship was a solid relationship and then you found out later that it wasn't and maybe you got divorced? No, I'm not saying that.
Okay.
I am saying, and I'm speaking as a grown man, every child that walks this earth with my name on it, I knew I was going to make a baby. I was committed to being a father. I was committed to being a father even though I may not have known that my relationship with their mother would not last.
Okay.
So if you're laying with someone and you're thinking of it as just love and sex and not a commitment to parenthood, that's not a grown decision.
Okay.
You know, and men, unfortunately, have been taught, hey, spread your seed all over the place.
Right.
Again, you have the adult right to do it. Again, it's not about morality. It's about what is the outcome that you really want. A third sign that a man is not grown is that he is either unable or unwilling to control himself.
What do you mean?
He can't control his temper.
Okay.
He can't keep a job because he can't kind of get himself to work on time. He can't... He just can't seem to do it. He's an adult male, meaning he's past the age of puberty, but grown people can manage and control their own behaviors.
How do you tell about a woman?
Well, we do three signs she's not a grown woman.
Okay.
If she sees her body as the most valuable attribute, not grown.
Okay.
You say an adult woman who is not grown measures her self-esteem by the length of her hair, the depth of her cleavage, and the breadth of her butt.
Not grown.
A grown woman understands that her body and her beauty are not her most valuable attributes.
Now, there's a lot of pressure from society towards women to pay attention to the hair, the cleavage, the shape, the whatever, the wrinkle, you name it. Women of all races. You're saying don't pay attention to what you are surrounded by on a daily, almost 24/7 basis.
Well, what's happened? Here's what it is. I'm a fitness buff, so I believe in being fit and healthy, and I want my six pack abs. And I'll be leaving the gym after I finish talking, or going to the gym after I finish talking to you, because I get it. But you're doing it for you.
Okay.
And my body still isn't the most valuable thing about me. My spirit, who I am on the inside, is the most valuable thing. So it doesn't mean you shouldn't take care of your body. It doesn't mean you shouldn't be proud of your curves and dress in a way that accentuates your physical appearance. But you understand, grown people understand, that is packaging.
Okay.
That's not who you are. It's what you are. You're gorgeous and shapely, or you're fit and muscular. It's what you are. And grown people understand that healthy love is being loved for who you are, not being loved for what you have, what you look like, and what you can do. Because the latter changes. The latter cannot be sustained, but who you are can be sustained. Another sign a woman's not grown is that she confuses being wanted and desired with being valued and loved. So all a man has to do is give you attention, and you surrender your body, your money, your heart, and your home, because you just think that as long as you get somebody to give you some attention, again, the low standard, then that means you're being loved, only to find out later that love had nothing to do with it.
Right. Okay.
And the third point we already talked about, if a woman feels inadequate when she's not in a relationship, that's not grown. She may be an adult woman, but she's not grown.
And that happens, quite frankly, so many times. And depending on how inadequate one feels and how that shows up, I think you would probably agree that it might be the time for professional assistance, for male or female, because that can be a debilitating place to be.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, again, I circle back to a point I've made several times in the show. Grown people are self-loving people. They understand that you cannot attract any love from anyone else that exceeds your love for yourself.
Okay.
So yes, if your lack of self-love, your lack of self-esteem is so deep that you cannot make healthy choices for your life, that is a prime sign to get professional help to work with you and your relationship with yourself.
Alfred, we've been talking about folks who are grown, the difference between being an adult and being grown. So let's jump forward to someone has read your book, someone has done the work to shift from being simply an adult to being grown, and look back on all the relationships that have been in their life, and maybe some of them not so healthy. Do you ditch the unhealthy friendships, or what do you do? Do you try to change them? Do you try to teach them? What do you do?
You don't try to change them. One, because you can't. I mean, if I thought it would work, I'd tell you to do it.
Okay.
You can't change other people. You can't.
Okay.
And again, there's so much that we've been taught, movies, television shows, songs, church, that says you can love someone into being somebody else.
Right.
Love does not give you the power nor the right to fix, control, or change the behavior of another person.
Okay.
That doesn't mean you stop loving them.
Okay.
But if you think your love is going to change them, you will be sorely disappointed. That's
all
not
right.
how love works.
Okay.
Love affirms who a person is. It doesn't change them.
Okay.
So with that in mind, you say, okay, now you realize, let's say you read the book and you've decided to set some standards and boundaries in your life that are self-loving standards and boundaries so you can get the love and the treatment that you require. In some cases, that's going to mean you do have to distance yourself from people.
Mm.
There are people I love that I don't talk to very often.
Huh.
There are people that I love that I don't see very often. Some of my family members, always tell people, not everybody who's your relative is your family.
Mm-hmm.
Because family is a function of how you're treated. Relative just means you're related.
Okay.
And this is a hard conversation for some, because sometimes the person whose the relationship is the least healthiest is the person we're living with, the person
Right.
we're sleeping in the same bed with, the
Right.
person we have rings on each other's fingers. And in those cases, and I've made that choice twice in my life, before I read this book, so I did a lot more destruction than I would have liked to. But that's when you have to say, do I let this person go so that I can be healthy? Or do I keep them and be unhealthy and be destructive and hurt them and hurt myself?
That's a hard conversation to have with oneself.
But if you're truly self-loving, that's why this personal growth self-love thing is very important.
Okay.
You can't, love doesn't mean holding people hostage.
Okay.
And when you're in jail or you're the warden, you're also the prisoner. The prisoner can't leave, but you can't either.
That's right.
So we spend a lot of time in the book talking about forgiveness doesn't mean holding on. Forgiveness
mm-hmm.
means releasing. It means letting go. Now, if the person has said, no, I'm committed to meeting this new standard that you set for me, you know, that you're not going to accept abuse, that you're
okay.
not going to accept disrespect, that you're not going to accept fidelity, and I care about myself and care about you so much that I'm willing to commit with you in partnership to create a healthy, loving relationship together, that we're going to put a period on this relationship that was unhealthy, and together I'm willing to start over with you to become different, better people separately and become a better team and partnership together, then that person is doing that willingly. You're not making them do it.
Okay.
You're giving them an opportunity to start off from scratch and say, let's start all over using self-loving, healthy principles of honor, esteem, and respect to build a relationship. And I know couples who have done that, who maybe he was cheating the marriage almost ended, and he really said, I know I've been conditioned to be this way, but I really committed to this relationship. If you have a partner who says, I'm willing to walk this grown path together with you,
mm-hmm.
give it a shot. But go by behavior.
Okay.
Don't go by feelings.
Okay.
We've been taught that love is about how people make you feel.
Okay.
But no, love is about how you're being treated.
You have used the word partnership consistently. Sounds like that's a real important piece for a grown relationship from your perspective.
It's not a grown relationship if it's not a partnership.
Okay.
So it's not possible to have a grown relationship of any kind that's not a partnership. So I tell men all the time, partnership is the P word you should be looking for in a woman, not the other thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's the wrong P word you're thinking about.
Gotcha.
Does this woman have the capacity to give you a space of compassion, encouragement, emotional safety, joy, laughter, loyalty? Can you be safe with this person in every way? Because when you're 65 years old, or when you're 70 years old, or when you're no longer 25, and that's what's going to matter to you.
Right.
That's what's going to matter in life. That's what matters to all of us, regardless of race, gender. When it's all said and done, what we want is to have a place in this world where we can be totally safe and totally affirmed and totally secure and totally loved. And you don't get there without, one, giving it to yourself, and two, making that a non-negotiable standard in your relationships with other people. So if you and a lot of our people who read Loving in the Grown Zone are couples who read them together, either before marriage, mm-hmm. or they may already be married, mm-hmm. and they're not trying to leave each other, but they're not totally happy.
Okay.
And they want to find a framework and a structure to say, here's going to be the way we're going to operate our relationships so that we are not settling. Even in our happy marriage, we're not settling. But we're both growing together. The marriage gets better every day. Our relationship gets stronger every day. And I look forward to tomorrow because the way we're treating each other makes us look forward to tomorrow together. And that's about looking for the relationship sustainers.
Right.
And you got to look for it from jump. You can't say, I'm going to get the fine body and the six-figure uh-huh. salary and mm-hmm. then try to get a sustainer out of it. You got to be looking for it from the beginning. And in the back of the book, Loving in the Grown Zone, we have a glossary of terms because we want people to look at this as almost as a guideline and a workbook and a primer.
Okay.
Sustainer characteristics are respect and admiration, that this person gives you respect and admiration.
Okay.
They appreciate you.
Right.
They're compassionate toward you. So when you come home from a hard day's work or the kids gave you a hard time at home and that person sees you in distress, they don't criticize you. They don't ignore you. They say, baby, what can I do to make you feel better? I understand. Because, you know, you can't even fix the problem. A lot of times you can't fix the problem.
Right.
You just want somebody to understand. So compassion, forgiveness. When you do make a misstep, you want to apologize and know that the person is going to forgive you, but who is trusting you not to do that transgression again.
Okay.
Fidelity and loyalty. Men need women who are into fidelity as much as the women are.
Mm-hmm.
Men can be very damaged when they feel like they can't trust their partner. Acceptance. You want to be unconditionally accepted. That doesn't mean you're not expected to get better.
Okay.
But you don't want somebody throwing your past at you. You don't want somebody throwing the fact that you've been divorced before in your face,
mm-hmm.
or that you have children from other relationships. You want someone that says that you are perfect and fine just as you are, and I love you, good, bad, and ugly. We all want that. And that's why we have to give it to ourselves. You got to forgive yourself
gotcha.
So you can embrace forgiveness from others. And finally, and most importantly, is safety, physical safety, and emotional safety.
Yeah.
When I come home to my house with Zara, and you know, I've been out 18 hours working, commuting, dealing with all the things you've got to deal with in your life. And I turn the key in the door. In fact, we cover this in the book. When you hear that key in the door, is it a feeling of joy and anticipation, or anxiety and concern?
And that's
when the garage
huge.
Door opens up and you hear it opening up.
That's right.
When that person's about to walk through the door, whichever side of the door you're on, it's not a healthy relationship if you feel like, oh my God, he's
right.
Home. Or, oh my God, I killed enough time at the bar after work trying to delay this, but now
right.
I do have to go home.
Right.
And God knows what's waiting for me when I get there. The married couples that I know who read Loving in the Grown Zone, they don't want anybody else. They want the person they're with.
Uh-huh.
But they also want to be joyful when that person comes through the door. And they're reading Loving in the Grown Zone and say, what can we do with our relationship so that no matter what else is going on in our lives, when I see you, I'm happy to see you. And that's what Loving in the Grown Zone is about. That's what people can have, but they have to believe they
right.
can have it.
Exactly.
And then they have to know how to get it.
All right. Alfred A. Edmond Jr., co-author with Zara D. Green of Loving in the Grown Zone, a no-nonsense guide to making healthy relationships in the quest for living, romantic, and the request. Loving in the Grown Zone, a no-nonsense guide to making healthy decisions in the quest for a loving, romantic relationships of honor, esteem, and respect. Alfred, before we let you go, can you give us web addresses and all of that so people can be in touch? Just let us have it one more time.
Well, I'm going to give you two key websites to go to.
Okay.
To learn more about the book and to purchase the book, and we're available everywhere you can buy a book, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, our publisher, Balboa Press, is hardcover, softcover, ebook, however you want it. Go to lovinginthegrownzone.com.
Okay.
And you'll learn all about the book and other resources that we have at that site to help people. Also, and this is a gift that we want to give to your listeners, we have a downloadable ebook called 9 Keys to Finding Healthy Love, Even If You Have No Idea Where to Look. This is a free ebook.
Wonderful.
Go to grownadvice.com.
Okay.
And that not only gives you access to that free download, but we have a closed Facebook group where there's about 400 people, and we spend the whole every day talking about ways we can improve our treatment of ourselves and others. So grownadvice.com for the free download,
okay,
and lovinginthegrownzone.com to get the book. And we're Grown Zone everywhere, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Google+. You name it. All you do is Google Grown Zone, and you will find us everywhere, and you'll be able to connect directly to me and Zahra Green across social media.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much for your time today, and thank both of you for creating this book.
Well, thank you for having us on. We definitely want to come back. Zahra is so sad that she couldn't be on with me. She was looking forward to doing this interview. So hopefully we'll be back again, and then Zahra will also be by my side.
Zahra will be back, will be with us. You tell her not to worry. She's coming on Mind Talk.
Excellent.
All righty. Thank you for listening to this edition of Mind Talk. This program is not intended to take the place of professional care, including mental health and medical health services. Mind Talk is produced by Jim Brown and 26x2 Communications for Mind Talk with Dr. Pamela Brewer. If you would like to be in touch directly, please call 301-654-5286. That's 301-654-5286. And for more information about Mind Talk, please go to mindtalk.org. That's MYNDTALK.org. And you remember, if it's unacceptable, then it's unacceptable. Take care.